The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Greetings, everyone. I'm Jennifer Green for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Teen Magazines. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from theteenmagazine.com. Our first article today is The Art of Confrontation, Standing Up for Yourself Without Feeling Guilty. And this article is written by Angeline Zhao. I am terrible at confronting other people. I find it so difficult to stand up for myself without feeling guilty about it afterward. I convince myself that I overreacted, that they didn't mean it that way, that it wasn't such a big deal. Those excuses fueled my fear of confrontation for a long time. For everyone else with the same fear of confrontation, this is for you. A guide to the complicated art of confronting someone without feeling guilty about it, as told by someone who has learned many ways to trick her overthinking brain. 1. Don't confront other people when you're too emotional to think straight. Although you shouldn't postpone confronting someone else for too long, it's a bad idea to do so when you're feeling very emotional. Obviously, you might be riled up by the end of your conversation anyway, but it's never good to start an argument because you're too angry to have an actual conversation. It's much more likely that you'll start firing accusations that may be true, but don't contribute anything to resolving the problem at hand and probably make it much, much worse. And, as I can say from first-hand experience, launching into a full-on shouting match will only make you feel more guilty after you have time to look back on it. 2. Write down the reasons why you feel upset. If you're like me, starting a difficult conversation with someone is terrifying. You might immediately lose track of the things you want to say, which then makes you feel like maybe you were in the wrong, so you give up the argument altogether. I myself have gone through so many cycles of trying to start a conversation and then feeling like I'm the one making too big a deal out of everything, but then feeling guilty at myself for backing down so easily. It's a vicious cycle. To avoid it, start writing out bullet points about why you were upset before you go and talk to whoever was involved. List them out as reasonably as you can and think them over first. If you take the time to organize your thoughts before you confront someone, you're less likely to believe you're in the wrong halfway through the conversation. This works surprisingly well, so definitely try it out. 3. Hold yourself accountable. One problem I always had was postponing a confrontation over and over again until it was too late to say anything. Don't do that. Of course, like in number 1, don't march over to have a conversation immediately, but also don't push it back for weeks or months. To prevent yourself from simply giving up on confronting someone once the anger has died down a little, which is something I go through every single time I'm upset with someone, hold yourself accountable. There are many ways to do that. Write notes to your future self, explaining why you shouldn't just ditch the conversation. Ask someone else to force you into having the conversation. Anything works. This may sound absolutely nuts, but it's the hardest part of confronting someone, forcing yourself to go and do it. 4. Tell them what you want to change instead of complaining about what they've already done. Everyone screws up. There's nothing you can do about it. And as cheesy as it sounds, the only thing you can do is stop it from continuing. Telling someone what they did wrong is good, but going on and on about it resolves nothing and will probably annoy them. Instead, tell them what you want to change in the future. If you think there's a lack of boundaries in your relationship, tell them you want them to respect your personal space from now on. If you think they're insensitive about something important to you, tell them why you felt hurt and why it's important that they don't do it again. Focusing on the future and what they can change is much better and often much more successful than talking about what they did in the past. What if you can't resolve the argument? If you're trying to have a legitimate, mature conversation and it's going nowhere, you may just need to stop. Even though, for the most part, confrontations are for resolving problems and restoring relationships back to normal, sometimes things don't go the way you planned. If you're being as honest and calm as you can and they just aren't getting it, understand that this friendship or relationship is probably going nowhere and move on from it. And who knows, maybe they'll think it over after the fact and realize that you did have a point and all will be well. Confrontation isn't as scary as it seems. It may seem terrifying, and I can't lie to you and say that it's become easier and easier to sit down and have that awkward, kind of hostile conversation with someone. But you do improve at it over time. And what I've realized from forcing myself to stand up for myself and make myself heard is that nothing ever turns out as bad as it seems. You might be afraid that confronting a close friend will ruin your relationship completely. But sometimes, taking the time to have a serious conversation will do wonders for your relationship. Keeping things pent up might feel less awkward and less difficult to begin with, but everything builds up in the end, and it's much better to choose when you want to let it out instead of waiting for it to explode on you. So, yes, it's scary, but no, it's not the worst thing in the world. Just think through your thoughts and feelings beforehand. Keep calm during your conversation. And just do it. And our next article, Mental Health Support When Therapy Isn't an Option. And this article is written by Serena Thakkar. In an ideal world, therapy would be available to everyone, mental health would be devoid of stigma, and the price of seeking help wouldn't break the bank. Unfortunately, society's not there yet. According to Mental Health America, 60.3% of young people suffering from major depression receive no mental health treatment. It's imperative that teens are aware of other resources they can turn to when they're in need of help. Although they may not help to the same extent as a professional, these resources will always remind you that you're not alone. 1. Podcasts. Accessibility and a wide range of topics make podcasts a great free resource to turn to. Whether you're looking for tips from a licensed psychologist or hoping to tune into someone else's journey that's similar to yours, podcasts are the place to go. Although the resources below are listed by disorder, by no means do you need to be diagnosed to use them. If you struggle with symptoms that align with any of those listed, take a listen. Anxiety Disorders. Anxious in Austin. The Anxiety Coaches. Social Anxiety Solutions. Mood Disorders. The Self-Work Podcast. The Bipolar Battle. Tell Me What You're Proud Of. Eating Disorders. Food Psych. Behind the Binge. No Food Rules. Schizophrenia. Inside Schizophrenia. Psychosis Positivity. Interview with a Schizophrenic. Personality Disorders. Bold, Beautiful Borderline. The Good, the Bad, and the BPD. Breaking the Borderline Stigma. Dissociative Disorders. System Speak, Dissociative Identity Disorder. The Bag System. Two Houses. 2. Journaling. I get it. Your first thought is probably, what do I even write about? That's the best part about journaling. You get to decide. Whether it's a short list, elaborate paragraphs, or simple affirmations, as the writer, you decide what turns and loops your pen takes. That's right, pen. Journaling is not about erasing, fixing grammatical errors, or making sure every sentence has a verb, noun, and adjective. There's no pressure to stay on topic, like in English class, and digressing is encouraged. Journaling is about asking yourself the necessary questions to identify what you're feeling, the trigger that led to it, and how to cope. It's easy for your mind to go down a rabbit hole and spiral, but by journaling, you can release all those feelings onto paper and part ways with what no longer serves you. Oftentimes, we tend to project our feelings onto others when we don't have a healthy outlet. Journaling serves as that much-needed outlet to digest how you're feeling, rather than carrying around those emotions for the rest of your day, which will interfere with your ability to focus, create strong relationships, and achieve your goals. 3. Warm lines. While hotlines are designed to be used in times of crisis, a warm line is a confidential number to call when you are in need of support or someone to talk to. You can have a conversation with a trained individual who has also dealt with mental health struggles and can empathize with how you're feeling. Most states have their own specific warm line. However, not all warm lines take out-of-state calls. 4. Social media accounts. Social media are an unavoidable, never-ending battle. You feel obligated to have the apps, even though the endless comparison does you no good, and 3 hours of scrolling later, you're left feeling guilty and unproductive. Or is that just me? Instead of attempting to convince yourself to eliminate spending time on the apps entirely, transform them into a positive space. The content on your For You page and Instagram feed is determined by what types of posts you allocate time towards, which is in your control. Follow people who inspire you, not tear you down. 5. Meditation. In a time where many of us are dwelling on the past or stressing about the future more often than living in the present, meditation is essential. Although it's difficult to escape the endless thoughts constantly bombarding our minds, focusing on your breath helps to still your mind. Guided meditations incorporating mantras are a great way to start, as mantras prevent your mind from wandering while you focus on a single or a few positive affirmations. By no means do these tips replace or compare to seeking help from a mental health professional. However, through listening to podcasts and following the right social media accounts, I hope you'll realize that you're less alone than you may think. I hope that through journaling, you're able to ask yourself the necessary questions that lead to similar moments of self-discovery that occur with a therapist. I hope that through learning about warm lines, you realize that you always have someone to talk to who understands what you're going through. You are not alone. If you or someone you love is in a mental health crisis and in need of help, dial 988. And our third article today, The Key to Having a Great Morning. And this article is written by Abigail Dudkowski. As soon as the alarm clock sounds, it can be all too easy to fall back asleep, or worse, lay in bed for hours scrolling through social media. Don't start your day feeling miserable. Instead, find yourself feeling refreshed and eager to start the day. Discovering a morning groove that works for you can be challenging, but with these tips and tricks, you can start your day on the right foot. 1. Appropriate amount of sleep. In order to achieve a rejuvenating morning, Start ahead of the game by getting an adequate amount of sleep. Your body needs time to rest. According to CDC, teenagers should get approximately 8 hours of sleep. Unfortunately, due to busy schedules and stressors, many do not. Still, it is important to try and get as much rest as possible. Options could be to take naps during the day or set out time for relaxation. One method I use to help me fall asleep is listening to calming music or a movie soundtrack to help ease my mind. A complete night's sleep can help foster the start of a spectacular day. 2. Morning workout. Another tip to start your day off on a positive note is implementing a simple workout routine into your morning. Exercise can help clear your mind and allow a better sense of focus. Personally, I enjoy doing yoga or vinyasa yoga, but other exercise routines could include running or walking. More often than not, doing so helps me focus on the day ahead and mentally prepare for the challenges I may face. When you exercise, your body releases chemicals called endorphins, which help improve your mood and therefore, by extension, your day. 3. Healthy breakfast. Thirdly, and most often ignored, is eating breakfast. After all, breakfast is the most important meal of the day. Many people choose to eat sugary cereals or heavy carbs, and I, too, struggle to eat a healthy breakfast. I want to make a quick bowl of cereal because it's delicious and easy. And while breakfast cereals are not necessarily terrible for you, there are smarter and healthier options. Some possible breakfast ideas include fruit smoothies, banana pancakes, easy baked oatmeal with berries, and yogurt parfaits. A healthy breakfast is essential to feeling energized for the day. 4. Set goals. The fourth suggestion to start your day feeling mindful and healthy is to set daily goals. Whether you write them down or mentally state them is up to you. Goals provide motivation to complete seemingly menial tasks throughout the day. Some may contribute to longer-term goals. For example, one of mine is to meditate at least once a day. Another is to practice my flute, which could help with auditions in the future. Goals are an encouraging way to set a path for the day. 5. Stay hydrated. The last way to enrich your morning is to stay hydrated. Throughout the day, you will most likely become involved in multiple tasks, which can prevent you from drinking enough water. Dehydration or not drinking an adequate amount of water can cause headaches, feeling thirsty, lightheadedness, and dry mouth, lips, and eyes. One way to help remind you to drink water is to use a bottle that shows you when and how much water to drink. Add drinking water to your morning routine for a healthy start to your day. By getting adequate sleep, exercising, eating breakfast, daily goal setting, and staying hydrated, a healthy and mindful morning is achievable and bound to be rewarding. And our last article today, Gatekeeping Music. Is it toxic for the music industry? And this article is written by Olivia C. Gatekeeping. According to the Cambridge English Dictionary, gatekeeping is defined as the activity of trying to control who gets particular resources, power, or opportunities, and who does not. This definition, while not completely akin to the TikTok interpretation, is one that can be utilized when discussing the gatekeeping of music and musical artists. In recent months, the hashtag gatekeep has gone viral on TikTok, leaving many confused as to what it means and its relevance in the field of pop culture. The virality of this hashtag highlights the core meaning of what gatekeeping is. the conservation of the regard to which select individuals hold their personal musical tastes. Don't be misled, though. Gatekeeping can refer to the gatekeeping of hair and makeup, in which people who have learned a hack to perfect their beauty routine do the best they can to prevent others from claiming the trick as their own. One can also gatekeep a movie when they find some sort of underreported or underreviewed piece of filmography that they attempt to keep from the general public because they believe it is too niche for most people to understand. Gatekeepers often undermine the intelligence or the appreciative abilities of people interested in similar genres, movies, clothes, etc., and attempt to hide it or label it in a way that conveys their distaste for others cherishing the work that they themselves hold to such a high regard. Labels. Gatekeeping is most often seen in the bestowing of objectionable labels and titles. Words like vintage, quirky, or rare are used to describe objects or bodies of work that create a distinction between what is heralded as unique and special and what is commonplace and trendy. By guilt-tripping those who are curious about these objects and pieces, it creates a culture of toxicity and makes it unpopular to appreciate these things. The psychology of acquisition and proprietorship. It is in human nature to want to be a part of or own something. According to the National Institute of Health's National Library of Medicine, a research experiment conducted by Lauren Liotti, Sheena Iyengar, and Kevin Oshner studied this very phenomenon. It states that the belief in one's ability to exert control over the environment is essential for an individual's well-being. There is an innate human lust for control that turns into a psychological sine qua non. In the case of the gatekeeping of music, these instances largely occur because people want to feel like they own something special. The only problem with this need is that they are trying to make a claim on something that is public and never belonged to them in the first place. Gen Z versus Boomers. In 2021, a TikTok was posted in which skateboarder Nathan Apodaca was filmed skating and drinking cranberry juice while listening to the classic song Dreams by Fleetwood Mac. And while many celebrated the resurgence of the song's success, many longtime fans of Fleetwood Mac's music denounced the celebration. In the comments, they were making claims about music simply because they were fans before the newer generation began to appreciate music. This is also seen in the consistent social media rivalry between Gen Zers and their elders. Be it fashion, parenting choices, lifestyle choices, or political ideals, there always seems to be a new debate being sparked between the generations. This clashing isn't anything new, however. A common theme in the young adult media is the misunderstandings between teens and out-of-touch parents. These ideas of social estrangement and displacement are often woven into coming-of-age movies and novels. The reason why these ideas are center stage now is because now everyone has a platform. These platforms are places in which people can speak their minds, regardless of how agreeable these statements may be. Furthermore, when the youth and their forefathers both try to claim the spotlight with whatever ideas or comments they have about each other, they inevitably collide. Hence the creation of gatekeepers. Unpopularly popular. Names like Harry Styles, Doja Cat, Beyoncé, and Ariana Grande are ones that need no introduction. People like Kanye West and Adam Levine couldn't walk into a room without hundreds of people recognizing them just by their faces. But when people of different backgrounds form similar opinions and come together for the sole reason of worshiping their idols, what happens? Well, naturally, someone strays from the pack. Someone seeks out individuality by being quirky or different. This is another example of gatekeeping. Oftentimes, people dislike the feeling of liking what's popular or trendy, as it makes them feel basic or unextraordinary. They change their musical tastes and tarnish the credibility of others in hopes that it makes them seem like trendsetters or innovators. Conclusion. In a time where social media and streaming services make it exceptionally hard to label a genre as niche, many people feel entitled to music that they resonate with the most. These communities or fandoms of relatively unknown artists or genres turn what is intended for public enjoyment into a fight for the ownership of what was never theirs in the first place. Furthermore, using labels and discouraging words as justification for the control of an artist's work. And instead of creating a tight-knit community of like-minded music lovers, walls are built up to make the community of varying opinions even more divided. We've run out of time for today's episode of Teen Magazines. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Jennifer Green, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Teen Magazines is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. We thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.